Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Noobus Podcast. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, whenever the hell you're listening to this. I'm not your mother. I don't know. The Noobus is a network for nerds that publishes headline news about technology, entertainment, gaming, and other nerdy topics. Interviews, reviews, editorials, fan fiction, etc. I'm your host this week, Jeremy Barnes. I'm joined this week by...
Max Taylor, resident video game nerd and staff writer for the Noobist.
Laura Fagan, resident op-ed writer for the Noobist.
Eric, resident staff writer for Noobist.
Okay, cool. All right, so I have a few topics lined up here. If anybody doesn't want to do any of these, just speak up and say this one sucks, and we won't do it. But first one on my list is everybody familiar with the Steam Store kind of Christmas explosion last week?
Yep. Okay. Very much aware of it.
Eric, Max, you guys know what's going on, or should I just lay it out?
I've heard a little bit about it.
Yeah, I experienced it myself.
So did I.
I think I'm the only one that doesn't use Steam, so...
Really? You don't use it at all?
Completely enlightened. No, I'm mainly on consoles, so...
Pretty good. Just if any listener doesn't know what happened, I'll lay it out briefly. So, basically, last Christmas, there was a problem with the Steam Store server, and when a user went to fetch data, or went, okay, I want to look at this thing on the store. They tried to retrieve something from the store's website. It gave the information from another user. So the information that should have been getting sent out wasn't getting sent out correctly. So say I wanted to see the football manager page on the Steam store as me. I would log in, click on the page, and see it with Max's profile information on it. So it was sending information that users shouldn't have been seeing. So you could see people's emails. If I'm not mistaken, partial pieces of people's credit cards. I'm not 100% sure. But like anything that I could see on my page, it would send to somebody else. So people were seeing Steam Store pages in Russian, you know, whatever. It was bizarre. But, you know, this is how, you know, aside from Max, this is how a lot of people get their games, you know, through software licenses and, you know, codes, and you have to go through a third party. You know, you don't just, I have the game and now I play it. That's not how it works. You're usually going through some kind of provider or publisher. So, what happens if the provider goes down? You're kind of fucked. Like in this case, like there's no way to get them. And what happens if it would just go down completely?
Did it affect offline services?
No, but imagine if this were worse. Like, if your account information were just totally compromised. You know, what if your Steam account totally gets screwed and you can't access it? Or somebody else has access to it and you need to terminate anyone that can access your account. You know, your library is effectively gone. All of those, you know, tens, hundreds, thousands of dollars you put into your games has been wasted. What... do you're just kind of shit out of luck, and it just seems to be kind of the environment that we're living in.
Yeah, well, we're increasingly becoming a, you know, digital age, not just with gaming but for a lot of things, and it's really convenient because it's all in one place. Anyone has internet access, you can access your stuff. But yeah, this whole problem has kind of revealed that how paper thin security can be, how, like, as you said, it could be a lot worse. Like, I mean, for me, I didn't really notice or care because it was fixed in a relatively short time. All I saw was, my only problem was I started reading my Steam page in Russian. And that was a little weird to me. But you're totally right because, PlayStation Network and I'm sure Xbox Live had the same problems. Things were really bad. And yeah, it's when you become increasingly more centralized in sort of one network, it's like you put all your eggs in one basket, and it can be stolen, you know, a lot easier.
Right.
When the problem comes from.
Are you okay with that system? Is the ease of it, does that excuse the risk? Are you okay with, I willingly put up with all of this risk in order to get my games easier or to find them more quickly? Is that an okay trade-off for you?
It's hard to say. I'm sure most people would be like, I don't really care until it happens to them, right? Yeah, Well, yeah, I guess the bigger issue being not just, well, because when it comes to the immediate situation, oh, I lost my games and oh, I lost, you know, access to my account. I can probably just call Steam support and get it sorted out and get my, at the very least, get a refund. But bigger issue being like, identity theft, you know, fraud.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of thing. I guess, yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I've had Steam for an extremely long time and I've never had problems with it. So I guess until that day happens, I guess I'm okay with it.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that, you know, up until Christmas, and even that didn't affect me. Like, I wasn't on the Steam store. I just kind of read about it. But it's kind of scary when it does happen. Because I, like you, Eric, I didn't think about it until it did happen. Like, oh, yeah, Steam's fine. Doesn't have a problem. It's never, you know, it's never crapped out of me. I've never had a problem. And when something like this happens, you see, and it was somebody just screwed up. Like, somebody pushed the wrong button or executed the wrong action and everything just went to crap. So it's scary how, you know, how fragile everything is. I mean, it all rests on, everybody tries their best. I'm not trying to shit on Valve or anything. I'm sure they've created an amazing infrastructure and it's the way it works is incredible, and it's surprising that it's worked as well as it had, but you know, we're all still human and people try to break into it all the time. So what we devote so much time into can just be taken away so quickly. Laura, Max, yeah. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think just like digital distribution in general is, it's been around for quite a long time. So it should sort of, and as it's being relied upon more, it should be more sort of stable. I guess this sort of thing isn't going to happen once in a while, but the whole sort of system gets messed up. So I suppose the only thing they can do is learn to deal with it more efficiently. Because, yeah. Like, PlayStation Store's been down before, right. Xbox Marketplace has been down before. I guess the only sort of test that they've got to face is how quickly they can deal with it.
Right.
There are periods where it will be off for, like, a few days, whereas it should be really a couple of hours at most.
PlayStation had that. PlayStation Store had that big scare.
Yeah.
How long? Was that for, like, a month or something, wasn't it?
It was
3 months in total.
Was it three?
Was it? Wow.
When it wasn't working to, like, everything wasn't working at the same time, you would have bits of access,
okay.
But not complete access to everything. So, if you can understand from my point of view, in which I am a console gamer and mainly PlayStation, this sounds like something quite minor, you know, in terms of the grand scheme of things. Oh, people from Steam lost access for, you know, a couple of hours.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
I understand the greater theme of identity theft and things like that, and it was only a matter of time until it hit Valve. I mean, if we're being honest and realistic about it, and like you were saying earlier, people are human, you know, whether it was a misclick, whether it was, you know, something more malicious, you know, like a hack. At the end of the day, that is the reality of the digital age right now. And it is up to people who we give our money to ensure that our data and our personal property isn't affected significantly throughout those periods of outages.
Yeah.
And it's more a broader topic on, do we feel that these multinationals are doing enough? And it also brings really into consideration, you know, there are other ecosystems out other than Steam. You know, we have Origin, we have, you know, plenty of others out there, but they don't have the same popularity as Steam.
Yeah.
Now, be that the ecosystem, be that the library source, given that, you know, it's the most popular and essentially got there first, quote unquote, will that cause people to now move away from Steam?
I don't, like you said, considering the infrastructure it has, I don't think many people are going to leave it just because they've invested so much time and money into it, and that's where their friends are, that unless it just, you know, it turns over on its back and completely dies, then I don't think anybody's going to move off of it yet. I think it would take the total annihilation of Steam for, you know, people to move off it, or some kind of heinous leak or, you know, terrible Valve PR or something. It would take a series of things. But to what you said about, you know, having other platforms like Origin and other places to get your games, they all kind of they're rooted in the same, they all have the same problem where you need to access a third party to access the, and I'm hesitant, I was going to say your content, but that's not exactly true because it's like content that's licensed to you. And that's kind of how games are work now. It's like you're not buying the game, you're buying a license. And there's no way, unless you're buying physical media, which isn't always the case anymore. Like when you bought the physical case for Metal Gear Solid 5, all the disc had on it was a Steam code. So it's like you had no option other than buy it on Steam or if they had it on another platform. So, you know, this is total like conspiracy theory apocalyptic, you know, sense talking. But what would happen if all these third parties just like went up in flames? Like what would happen, you know, if the internet died? I'm sure we'd have bigger problems than how are we going to play video games. But what would happen if all these services just went out? You know, again, we'd be shit out of luck. That'd be it.
Well, it would have a bigger effect on anything that is internet-based, obviously, than single player, standard, kind of your Uncharted's, your, you know, your Kingdom Hearts, your Tales, you know, anything that isn't dependent. I think the biggest problem about that is the fact that even when you do buy physical copies of things, which I tend to do, there is still a decent amount that is required for updates.
Right.
You know, nothing comes prepackaged standard anymore. And until we find a way of either securing the network or having all of the data that we need on a single disc for at least for it to be playable, not like updated, but not day one downloads either.
Yeah.
You know, it's totally symptomatic of us outstretching our growth too quickly before we can find proper solutions to existing problems.
Right. It's like a problem with the internet infrastructure. Like we can't, progress is stifled. Like we can't effectively stream 4K content to our homes without first improving, at least in the US, our internet infrastructure. And our internet infrastructure is pretty shit. You know, you're only limited by the amount of bandwidth you have. I don't know what kind of bandwidth situation you guys have over in the UK is.
Yes, it's not great either. It's like they're introducing improved internet to like different regions, but it seems to take ages. Where I live at the moment, which is sort of in the countryside, but you know, not too middle of nowhere, we still have pretty crap internet, to be honest.
Right.
So it's not that much better.
And unless you're in like a big city center, it's not.
Yes, if great. I was in like if I lived in London, I'd probably get pretty good internet. Yeah. But where I am at the moment, it's pretty weak.
Yeah, across the board, you know, on the average, probably not great.
Yeah,
like here, and you know, you can't improve Netflix or you can't improve game streaming until you fix the infrastructure, and then you're building in a house of cards, or you're being stifled by, you know, what's already been established. And it's kind of the same thing with game. Like the system we have set up doesn't work great. At the beginning, it doesn't work great. People have, you know, made it work. You know, third party DRM and licensing and everything. They've made it work effectively and to the best of its ability, but we're starting from behind. Like we're starting with a GIMP. It's like, okay, we can't really make it perfect until we tweak how it essentially works. And, you know, like again, having all these platforms go down at once is kind of far-fetched. Like who's going to take down Xbox Live, Marketplace, PlayStation Network, Steam, Origin, Uplay? Like, I don't know who's going to take those all down at once. That would be a pretty impressive feat. Yeah, it's just kind of scary.
It'd be interesting for me to sort of see how that affects me, because definitely out of us four, and I think gamers in general, I tend to play like single player games on console, and I'll buy the retail copy, like the hard copy.
Right.
So yeah, I sort of forget in a way about these different digital outlets and some of the different systems and infrastructures that are established. Because I don't really use them that much. Yeah. But I'd imagine that if that sort of thing were to crumble, then it would probably affect me more than I'd imagine it would.
Yeah.
Because stuff like updates are definitely sort of pretty essential.
Right. And it maybe it will creep in. Like, again, with the Metal Gear Solid thing, that was a mainly single-player game, but you were required to, you know, you couldn't even buy a physical disc if you wanted to. It was just a code that you need to be signed in to use. I guess you could do Steam offline mode, but initially you at least needed to sign in once, and then from then on it presumably would work offline.
Next topic?
Yes. I wanted to talk about video game journalism and about what it is, because it's kind of like an amorphous blob, and I hear people say, oh, this is what video game journalism should be, or this is what video game journalism is, and then, but there's so many different visions of what it should be, and I don't have a cohesive one of what it should be. My first thought would be, you know, oh, this is just journalism, but for video games, but then it doesn't really work in the same way that journalism does. It's hard to get really investigative in how traditional journalism can be, or I don't know. It's a really muddled thing, and I'm not sure what it is. So I want to try to, you know, try to figure out. We're not going to figure it out in the next 20 minutes, but maybe we can come to some sort of try to figure out what this amorphous blob is. Anybody?
Well, yeah. I guess the question is, how qualified is someone to talk about them, write about video games, and, you know, for them to get paid and for them to have, like, their opinions respected by community at large. Yeah, it does kind of seem strange, kind of undefined. Well, you go on IGN, and IGN gets what, the immense hate for a lot of their articles and reviews. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're still successful. People still come back to them. They're still seen as a mainstream source for video game news and opinions. Yeah, so I don't know much about what's considered, like, how do you get the job and what's considered good about that. I guess for me, when I read something by a video game journalist, it's just, I don't know, like, do their opinions seem somewhat reasonable, somewhat, you know, supported by, you know, facts or whatever?
Yeah.
Because when I read, just to give you an example, when I read the review for, say, Batman Arkham Knight, now this is a game that, I'm in the minority of saying, but this is like one of the worst Batman games I've played. And I bought the game because IGN gave it a 9.2, and so have other places too, not just IGN, but IGN was the first one I read. And it was listing things like, you know, like, oh man, the incredible story, man, and like, it's so captivating, and like, yeah, cool. But once I actually got the game, I realized the review had failed to actually identify a huge crippling problem, that being like actual, you know, offline content, like challenge modes. Every single Batman game up to this point has challenge modes. So you fight bad guys for rounds, or you do stealth missions, that sort of thing. There were, upon release, there were only like 4 of those. And the rest were just Batmobile challenges. And that's what this game became. Like, this game became Batmobile Simulator 2015. And it was awful. I couldn't stand this game anymore. And the story was the worst written thing I've ever seen, and especially in the Batman Arkham, franchise.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was blown away by how, what a complete opposite, you know, reaction I got out of the other person's review. So it's really strange. I can't really place blame, you know, on people, because at the end of the day, it's an opinion.
Right.
But you feel like you were misled when things like that happened to you.
Right. And that you were looking for, I was going to say you were looking for fact, but again, it's an opinion piece. So it's hard to be like, this game is 100% good and everybody's going to like it. That's, somebody out there is going to hate something, or somebody's going to love something that's crap. So the same for me. I've had a hard time finding reviewers that are like me exactly. Like, you have a pool of people that you can pick from that sort of share opinions to you. But is that all you think video game journalism should be? Just reviews? Or what else makes up video game journalism? Because I feel like there's more to it than just reviews. But it's hard to figure out where that line is. Like, okay, what are you responsible for? What are you not? What are you responsible for covering? What should you talk about? What shouldn't you talk about? You know, where are those lines drawn?
Right. I mean, certainly more than just reviews. I mean, they also just report on the industry, what's rumored to happen, what's coming up for sure, what were the hands-on previews they had? Because they're press, they have early access to content, and we don't. The majority of people don't. Yeah. In regards to what you said earlier, so what are they allowed to talk, what are they not allowed to talk? I know sometimes video games can delve into topics that reflect very much what's going, you know, to the bigger reality of what's going on. For instance, when I used to be subscribed to, like, what was it? Electronic Gaming Magazine.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And there was, like, an entire piece on the politics of video game. You guys remember, I think it was Jack Thompson. You guys remember him?
Yeah. He was an attorney or a senator or something?
Yeah. An attorney. It's a super hyper-Christian attorney who, like, made it his life mission to try to end the video games forever in America. He failed miserably, and no one took it seriously. It was hilarious while it lasted. But this is the guy who pioneered the hate for, like, GTA, right? When the Hot Coffee mod came out for San Andreas. And every single public shooting, right? Like, shooting spree, he blamed it squarely on video games, right? Didn't blame it on gun control, didn't blame it, or the lack of gun control, didn't blame it on the lack of, you know, healthcare we get for mentally disturbed people. He blamed it only on video games. And funny enough, so did the president of the NRA. Blamed it on just video games. You're right? Because we've never had violent forms of media ever, right, prior to video games. And, there's an entire piece on that in the magazine, and I thought it was incredibly interesting. I'm sure a lot of people do, and that seems relevant because it's directly referencing the entire industry. But then you get pieces like, I read another one about, like, the war in Iraq, because a game dealt with it. It was called, like, something in Fallujah, and it was a game about the Battle of Fallujah in Iraq.
Yeah.
And then people were writing back complaining, like, this isn't a political magazine. I came here to read about video games, not about, you know, your opinion, blah, 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 on what's going on in the world, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, it's like, to what extent are you allowed to address these sort of things if it pertains to a video game? Yeah.
Yeah, and what does your audience expect? That's kind of, to me, that is relevant. Like, I think it's 60 days in Fallujah. I forget what the number of days was.
Yeah,
whatever it was. 30. Oh, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's to me, that's relevant. Like, that's good video game journalism. Like, the news bites that kind of come out, those aren't always that interesting to me. Like, I don't always care, you know, what X writer, you know, what quip they said about Uncharted 4, or like what kind of what the promotional parade is that they're looking to see.
Right,
a
right.
lot of it is people cover is, you know, what publishers want you to cover or developers want you to cover. Like, all right, here's your press release it to your readers, and then that's it. And that's not always interesting to me. I like opinion pieces, or like you said, the 30 days in Fallujah, the X number of days in Fallujah piece, where they talk about the war or something and how that might impact games or something like that, something a little more nuanced. And most of, you know, on big sites like IGN or GameSpot, what have you, that it's a lot of just, you know, here's a press release, here's a couple headlines, and that's it. It's just kind of like this surface level news where it's not, you know, no one's delving into it, analyzing it. It's just like, here it is. Here's the release date.
But the flip side of that is how much interaction, you know, we dealt with this in, we touched upon it in the first podcast we did, I think, which is how much interaction do we actually get from publishers and the creators of our medium, because in a lot of instances, services like IGN and ourselves, we get set press releases, we get set, you know, things that we are told, and then we report on them.
Yeah.
We do not have a finer way of delving into, like, why, you know, Arkham was completely broken.
Yeah.
You know? And unless you know somebody who was directly working on the game, you know, you won't ever really find out the reasons why. Is that a flaw in our journalism? Absolutely. But you also have to keep in mind how protective publishers are of their content in general.
Right.
A good example of this is, you know, Jim Sterling being barred from Konami, blacklisted from various other places in terms of press, in terms of the free access that we get in terms of us being, you know, a journalism body. But if you say anything bad about it, you can consider, you know, your content and what you provide as a service to be invalid, you know, or it's something that Jim says a lot, is that if your content is strictly based on, you know, what free stuff you get from publishers, then you're probably not providing the best content that you should.
Then you just become a mouthpiece.
Yeah, which is a fine balance. I mean, I totally understand why people would go with the flow about it.
Right.
And in the defense of IGN, right, they did play it on the PS4 version, which was notoriously the one that didn't have any bugs and stuff like that on it. And from personal experience, I have two copies of Fallout. I have the PlayStation 4 version and I have the Xbox One version. When I got the PS4 version, it was completely broken.
Yeah.
Like, unplayable.
As Bethesda titles tend to be.
But I also got it on Xbox One. And it had a different set of bugs. Same game, different platform. But the bugs were more bearable on the Xbox One version.
Right.
So I am taking two games bought in a couple of weeks of each other on two different platforms, which have different sets of bugs and different sets of problems. So how do you, as a journalist, weigh up the value of something like that if you don't experience it? Because I would have never found out about the bugs on the, you know, on the PlayStation 4 one if I only had the Xbox One.
Yeah.
The same if I only had the Xbox One, I wouldn't have found out on the PS4. So it's about holding ourselves to the highest form of integrity when we are reporting on what we can. And not everything that, you know, that gets put out into the world in terms of games is of a high quality and should be.
Right, you know, I agree.
Ridiculed as such, you know, Steam Greenlight is a wonderful cesspool of stuff that should never see the light of day. you know, it's not true of everything on Steam, but it certainly is for a lot of it.
There's a lot of crap everywhere. Like, there's a lot of garbage that's coming out.
There's a lot of acid flips and a lot of stuff that if things were more regularized, then it wouldn't be as big of an issue as it is. But that might be true for everything.
Yeah. And I think what you were starting to hint at is it seems like outlets or journalistic outlets or any kind of whatever, people that write about games and stuff, that it seems like they're this all-in-one entity where sometimes the opinion pieces, sometimes they have news headlines, sometimes they release the press releases, sometimes they release this thing where it's like they're trying to do it all at once and there aren't any, there are very few specialized outlets that are good. IGN is trying to do it all, and in doing so, they do stuff, some stuff pretty well, but then they do other stuff not so well. I don't really trust their opinion pieces because it's hard to figure out what's a sponsored thing or what's totally opinion driven or what's even influenced by some of the sponsors that they have. Even if they're not being paid to do something, this isn't actually happening, but for the sake of example, let's say that Activision and Bungie were paying, okay, better example, like the Kane and Lynch thing that happened with Jeff Gerstmann and GameStop. When he wrote a crappy review of Kane and Lynch and they were sponsoring the website. Now, given this was a management issue, then management saw the bad review and went, all right, Jeff Gerstmann, you can't do this. We're going to fire you. Granted, and that was the manager's fault. Like, it wasn't GameSpot. Like, they just didn't understand the landscape. But you know, something like that happened where he got fired for having a contrary opinion to a publisher. That's kind of fucked up. And that doesn't always happen. Again, that's an extreme example. But for that to be, that can always happen because of the relationships that publishers and developers have with outlets like this. So do we need to change? In my head, I'd like to have separate outlets for different points of view, like have a news outlet that releases news headlines, or, you know, have places that are dedicated, for lack of better, mouthpieces or publishing outlets for certain developers. Like if you have like a Bethesda fan website, they publish Bethesda news. That's totally fine, but not when they're trying to post opinion piece. They're like, all right, here's a 100% genuine opinion of Fallout 4 or something like that. Like, you can't do that. You can't be both a place with opinions of high integrity and a place that releases what publishers want you to release. It's a weird mixture that I don't completely understand.
Yeah, I think that's, as a consumer of media, like games media, well, I tend to go to a real sort of variety of different outlets. I'll go to IGN or GameSpot for a set of things like news or previews, because they're obviously going to be entitled to the biggest scoops and the sort of the largest amount of promotional stuff, because they're the biggest names in it. But for stuff like opinion pieces, and I guess just different views, really, it's good to go to a sort of array of different people. I mean, the stuff at like IGN and GameSpot is going to be sterilized to an extent because they can't have, you know, totally radical opinions being published on their site because they've got to appease certain companies that they're sort of sponsored by or have information given to by. So you've got individuals like Jim Sterling who can give sort of quite a strong opinion without having any of those sort of industry repercussions.
Yeah.
So I think it's good, video game journalism specifically, but I think journalism in general, to have a broad net of consumption. Not to just stick to one sort of narrow-minded little bubble, but, yeah, you know, take information from all around. Otherwise, you're going to have a very sort of catered view of the industry and of video games in general.
Yeah, it's not the kind of environment I like. And again, it's a young industry, so you can see these things kind of evolving organically. Something that hasn't really seem to evolve, or that may evolve with this upcoming Warcraft movie, but video game movies I don't think have really evolved in the past. I don't know, since when did they start make video game movies in the 80s?
The first one I think of
is like the Super Mario Bros. Movie, or like The Wizard or something.
Yeah.
I guess that counts as a video game movie.
It's like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat as well.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about those.
So much cheese.
Those are terrible.
I will fight you on you saying that Mortal Kombat is shite, because that is definitely one of my favorite ones.
Okay. Too bad you will die.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat. Absolutely, I will fly over to wherever you who has said that, and I will punch you straight in the face. Like, take that back. Absolutely, take that back.
I didn't say it was shit. I haven't actually seen it, but so yeah, I'll shut up.
Then I don't know what the greater sin is there. I genuinely, I don't know what.
I'll watch it tonight.
Do.
Yeah. Cool. Granted, I haven't seen it either. I've seen like that 10-second clip. So
I've seen bits of it.
I don't have a solid opinion on the movie as a whole, so I can't judge. But I can say with certain confidence that video game movies are not good across the board. I can think of Prince of Persia was okay.
But then it was okay. It wasn't...
It was, yeah, again, it was
great, was it?
Okay. It was like off-brand Pirates of the Caribbean, which isn't great, but it's acceptable. Like, it functioned. And that seems to be the greatest compliment you can pay video game movies these days, is that it functioned.
Yeah, it's a shame because they've sort of established themselves. I mean, video game movies, those three words, sort of notorious now with being generally pretty crap. Because we've seen a lot of really bad adaptions. But I think the future for them, at least from what's coming out this year and next year, and the trailers I've seen for those films.
Yeah.
World of Warcraft and just Warcraft, whatever it's called.
Whatever.
The Assassin's Creed film. They both look like they might save video game movies and maybe reestablish them as a bit more of a credible sort of movie genre.
Yeah, it looks like they actually tried, or at least they're trying. It doesn't
they're
look
investing
like...
some budget into it and getting some good actors and directors and stuff.
Yeah, they're not just trying to say, all right, here's video game IP, movie time, and then just like crap it out. It's like, okay, this looks like somebody cared about it. Somebody might have put effort into it, and no one fell asleep while they were making this.
Yeah.
But then you have, like, I don't know why they made another Hitman movie. Like, the first one tanked, and then this one was terrible from what I hear. I didn't see it, but the reviews were abysmal. Let me see if I can pull it up. But I don't know. After, like, 20 years, you'd think that people would stop trying, you know, they see, oh, profitable video game IP. Let's make it a movie. Like, that doesn't work. And you'd think that people would realize that by now. It's like that having a profitable video game franchise does not instantly make for a profitable movie franchise. But I don't think people have realized that yet. Or at least, you know, people who are making the movies. I think audiences figured that out. But
it's like the thing with comic books being like the biggest source for movies. I mean, Avengers and Ant-Man and all that sort of stuff. They've really like mined the hell out of that as a resource for movies.
Right.
And I'm just surprised that they haven't really realized that video games have got an equal amount of wealth of stuff to delve into. There are so many different game worlds that you could adapt into movies. And I guess it looks like they're starting to realize that.
Yeah.
But it's sort of taken them long enough to do.
Right. Now, hopefully...
Video games have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Not as long as comics, I guess, but still, like...
Yeah. And I guess comic book movies have had a similar sort of trajectory that they weren't always good, but it seems like Spider-Man was really the turning point. They're more of a safe bet than, like, the Spawn movie or... I can't even... I haven't seen Blade. I think that one's okay, actually. Or, like, the first Daredevil with Ben Affleck. Like, Elektra. Those don't seem to be par for the course anymore. Now, the worst comic book movie, at least from Marvel, you're going to get is Ant-Man, which isn't even bad. Like, it's good.
I love that film. It's good.
Yeah, and it's good. Like, that's the worst you're going to get, and it's still very good.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
And then the best you're going to get is, like, Avengers and stuff. So.
Yeah.
Hopefully this year will sort of be the turning point in a way for video game movies. Because I think from just the top of my head, Warcraft and Assassin's Creed are the only two that I can really think of.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that if those are well made and those are well received, that'll urge studios to sort of explore video games as a resource a bit more. And hopefully in the next couple of years, 2017, 2018, we'll see some really interesting adaptions. Because I know from plenty of games that I've played that this would make an amazing film, or why haven't they made a film out of this or a TV show out of this?
Right.
So, I mean, there's plenty of stuff I'd love to see.
Yeah, I think a pretty safe example would be like make Uncharted a movie, because it's already a movie, sort of. It's one of the most cinematic series.
Yeah.
Right, it's one of the most cinematic game series that we have, that it seems obvious that you make that translation from game to movie. I mean, granted, we sort of have it, because we have the Indiana Jones movies, which are similar enough, but...
What Uncharted drew from, yeah.
Yeah, but even still, you can make something, you know, you could certainly make an Uncharted Nathan Drake movie, whatever. That'd be, like you say, it seems to be it's such a natural translation.
Yeah.
It seems like, why haven't you done this?
And with them, I mean, comic books have got a real wealth of stuff, but they're not to say that they're a narrow sort of spectrum, but it tends to be, you know, it's superheroes fighting a bad guy. It's a sort of a set sort of story in a way. Whereas with video games, you've got like as with movies, you've got genres, so you can make horror movie video games or comedy or action or cartoony ones. So it's not like a real sort of, you can only make a video game movie that is like this. You can make a Bloodborne movie, and that could be like an absolutely terrifying film. Or you could make like an Uncharted film, and that would be like a action adventure Indiana Jones with comedy and stuff. So it's you've got a wealth of genres to draw from that translate directly to film.
Right. And it's, hey, it's...
Just to add to that, so what's kind of, I guess, to me, is kind of a misconception of comic books being translated into film is that people are saying, I mean, a lot of people will tell you that, oh, comic books are, you know, superhero movies are becoming really saturated in the film market, which, you know, fair to say, there are a lot of them, definitely a lot more than we've ever had in the past. But comic books, the whole superhero thing is kind of just a modifier to a genre. I mean, like you said, video games are different genres. There's also a slew of different genres within superheroes, like genre. You have, I mean, Daredevil is essentially, can be a noir. A lot of times it is a noir. Same with Batman. And then you have things like, you know, well, Ant-Man, as you see in the film, is a heist comedy. Avengers, action blockbuster, sort of thing. So, I mean, yeah, to me, I know I'm a comic book, you know, geek, so I love seeing all these superhero movies. I can't get enough of it. But, that's kind of how I see it. That's why I never really see them as being repetitive, because to me, there's always something new to offer, each time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of stuff like, Gotham by Gaslight and stuff that would translate really well to film. Like, speaking of different genres within comic books. And it'd be cool to see those sort of explored a little bit more in films. I mean, obviously, like with Ant-Man and Avengers and, you know, that lot, all sort of stuff is fairly varied, but I think they could vary superhero films even more, especially with the sort of wealth of content that they've got to draw from.
Right. And I think maybe the boon that comic movies have had is that you have people attached to the projects that understand the source material. Because I think that's probably one of the most important parts of making any of these movies is that you understand the content that you're drawing from. Like, if they had people who had no idea what Spider-Man was or what the Avengers were, then you're going to get a pretty crap movie about them because, you know, no one part of the production, the people heading the production don't know what you're making. So then the thing that comes out is this weird amorphous thing, and it was like, what is this? What am I watching? And it seems to be the case with the video game movies. Like, no one knows the essence of what, I don't know what the essence of Hitman is, but like, nobody understands Hitman.
I can tell you one thing, the Hitman films, what they get wrong about Hitman is that he's not a fucking hero. That's it, plain and simple. He's not here to save the fucking damsel in distress. That's not what he does. He's a perfect killer clone who does a job. And yeah, things do get personal, but you know, it's a rare occurrence. And maybe that's what's so hard about adapting into film is that we're not used to someone who's just not a hero, right? We're not used to that. I mean, up until like, I think the most drastic change of that I've seen is with the upcoming Deadpool movie, right? Where he's not some, you know, guy playing the hero. He's doing what he wants, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And you can make that translation, but again, it's hard. So people don't do it. They're like, no, we want general movie. Let's throw an IP in there. You know, it'll sell. And like, it doesn't work. This is fucked. This logic doesn't work anymore. It's like when people try to copy World of Warcraft, they're like, all right, let's just make World of Warcraft, but with comic book guys. And like, no, it doesn't work. It's never worked. Just copying World of Warcraft doesn't work. Why do you keep doing it? I don't know. People just try to beat something to death until it doesn't work anymore. It's like, whatever. Hopefully we'll see a change with the Warcraft. You can come back with the Warcraft movie or the Assassin's Creed movie. I had a mind fart.
Yeah, but that one looks promising.
Yeah, again, it looks like people give a shit about the production.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how those are, and I'd quite like to review one of those, actually. Hopefully we can sort of restore our faith in video game movies. But I don't know, they might be complete shit and we might have to just give up all hope.
Right.
But let's hope not.
Right, and that was the Nubis podcast. Thank you, guys. Remember, the Nubis is a network for nerds, publishes headline news about technology, entertainment, gaming, and other nerdy topics, including interviews, reviews, editorials, fan fiction, and whatnot. I'm Jeremy Barnes. I've been your host for this week, and I was joined by
Max Taylor. You can find me at Maxed Out Games on most social networks and on the Nubis.
I am Laura Fagan. You can find me at Miss Laura Fagan on Twitter.
And Eric, you can just find me on the Nubis.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, this is Nubis Podcast. Thank you for listening.